This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. We thank you so much for listening. More shelling by the Turkish military on ISIS targets along Turkey's border with northern Syria. Turkish tanks even went into northern Syria pursuing ISIS targets earlier today. The U.S. is continuing airstrikes against the group in Libya and in Iraq. The Iraqi military is reported to be closer to retaking the city of Mosul from the Islamic State. And the United Nations Refugee Agency announced this week that 1.2 million Iraqis could be displaced in the efforts to remove the terrorist group from the city. Now, most Westerners watching this part of the conflict from afar have not experienced the fight against ISIS the way Christiane Boudreau has. We begin our hour with her story, one that probably would have remained secret if she hadn't insisted that it get out. Christiane Boudreau was a Canadian mother of two when her 22-year-old son, Damien Clermont, flew to Turkey, joined ISIS, and crossed the border into Syria to join the fighting. Damien's story of radicalization was one of a slow unraveling, from a happy childhood to teenage years plagued by depression. Boudreau says she never expected he was capable of joining a terrorist group. She didn't realize how bad things were until she heard about his death from a reporter. By then, her own government had begun trying to keep this whole story secret and eventually revoked her passport, preventing her from returning home. Boudreau spoke with me from France, where she's currently staying. Her son Damien was one of 4,500 Westerners who've joined ISIS.
Damien grew up as a very social child, very well integrated in the community. He was extremely intelligent, athletic, outgoing, happy-go-lucky. Didn't seem like there was ever a care in the world. Then as he got into his teen years, he struggled with some depression and had a difficult time, I'd say, when he hit about 14, until he turned 17, when he'd had a suicide attempt, a serious one, and was hospitalized for a couple of months. After he came out of the hospital, he started searching for something more, more meaning in life, to keep him going, and he found Islam. And that's when he converted. So that would have been 2008, and that was a really positive influence in his life for the first 3 years of his conversion.
So once this conversion first happened, was it something that you were happy with because it brought him around to a more positive outlook?
Sure. I mean, just seeing him relaxed and calm, feeling better about himself, getting out again, finding work, making friends again, because he kept himself in the house for the couple of years before his suicide attempt. So he'd kind of cut himself off from all the friendships he'd had. So I was relieved, if anything, to think that if he'd found something with meaning like that, then we wouldn't have any more suicide attempts, and that it was important for him, so it was important for me.
So Damien converted to Islam, things started looking up, and then what happened?
Well, things were looking up for 3 whole years, so it was a relief, like I said. Then he moved to a different part of the city. And when he did that, he was pretty much cut off from the original mosque that he was attending due to transportation issues. It was difficult for him to get there. He met some new people in his life, and that's when we started to see changes in him. He became much more agitated again, anxious almost, very cut off and private from the family. So he would come visit, but if he had a phone call that came through, he would take it outside so he wouldn't hear the conversation. Or if a friend came to pick him up, whereas before they would come in, say hello, shake everybody's hands, sit and chat for a bit. Now there were new friends and they were picking up around the corner from the house.
And when did you really start to worry about all of this?
Well, I didn't even begin to worry except more or less more about the depression, I guess, coming back. That was my biggest fear. But he still kept talking about a positive future. And when the initial suicide attempt happened, his biggest thing was that he'd not done anything with his life up until then. He felt he hadn't been productive. So the fact he was talking about future, becoming an imam and everything, I didn't think that was a concern quite then. I just wanted him to calm down, and I figured over time he'll find that happy medium, that balance.
And then at a certain point, Damien told you that he was going on a trip to Egypt, but that wasn't really the case.
Exactly. So what he started talking about was going to Egypt to study Arabic and becoming an imam. What I didn't realize was because he'd taken a ride from somebody else to get to the airport, that he was actually flying into Istanbul, Turkey. He stayed in Turkey from November 2012, at the beginning of November, until the latter part of December 2012. And at that point, that's when he crossed the border.
And were you more or less unaware of what he was up to in terms of really joining ISIS and combat until you heard through a phone call that he had in fact been killed?
Exactly. Well, I'd had an opportunity to talk to him. I was talking to him while I thought he was in Egypt. All along, he was in Turkey. So we would have discussions on the phone every 2 or 3 days, and everything seemed normal, and ask if he was eating okay, how his studies were going. I didn't know that when I was asking him about studies and he was answering, he meant training for combat. I lost touch with him when he first crossed the border. Then I received news from our security intelligence service at the end of January. They believed he'd actually gone into Syria. They'd been watching him for almost 2 years, and he'd been part of a group of young men in our city in Calgary. They were all leaving one by one to go into Syria or Iraq.
And when you got that news from the intelligence service suggesting that your son had joined one of the most notorious terrorist groups operating in the world right now, it's hard for me to ask even what was your reaction?
Well, at the time, ISIS really didn't exist, or nobody knew about it. We weren't aware of it in the media. We barely heard anything about the war in Syria, the civil war, on television. It was something I didn't even really understand. But I was violently physically ill for the first day when I received the news. It was basically shock.
So what has been the reaction of your government since then? You are currently in France. You're a Canadian citizen. And as I understand it, you have not been allowed to travel back to your own country in Canada. So what's going on with your own government?
It was a big issue. Even when Damien was over in Syria and I was still communicating with him, I was harassed by the Security Intelligence Service. I had our federal authorities asking me to help with the investigation with everything. But I was getting very antsy because nobody was, in turn, was giving help to the family. I said we needed some sort of emotional, psychological support. They kept saying, yes, yes, we're going to help, just have patience. Their biggest fear was that I was going to go public with the information. They were trying to keep it hidden and trying to keep it secret. And actually, one of the security intelligence agents had said to me, if you go public, it's going to destroy the image that Canada has, and there's going to be repercussions and consequences for that. And here we go. This is what's happened since. As I was trying to educate people so that they could be aware to stop their youth, here's the retaliation. I'm stuck in a country that's not my own. Thank goodness I'm here with my parents. I'd rather be with them anyway, but it's caused a lot of other difficulties as well.
So just to be clear, you're alleging that the Canadian government has confiscated your passport and that you can't travel back to Canada as retaliation for you having discussions like this one and going public about your son's conversion and joining ISIS.
That's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling the pressure. They were afraid that I would go to court against them because the way the case was handled in the beginning, they didn't try to stop him. And I kept trying to get answers. Why was he given a brand new passport 2 months before leaving if he was on a watch list? If we had have been known or been made aware, why wasn't there an attempt to arrest him, stop him? At first, they said there weren't any laws in place, but I researched it, and there were. There were since 2011. So I know none of that's true. And it's my understanding that they're trying to keep it quiet. They just don't want the issue to be raised on a regular basis.
There has been so much discussion, so much written about sort of the ingredients that go into radicalization in different places around the world. And it seems like in so many ways, your son fit the profile, right? Young, 17, 18, disaffected, looking for a stronger identity, finding a community, possibly among very conservative or in some cases radical Islamists, wherever he may be. So in those senses, it sounds like he fits the mold, if I can say it that way. But your own personal experience with your son's radicalization, what did it show you about the way this ideology can grip on to a young man in the way that it did with Damien?
Well, it's easy to understand and see with all the life's frustrations and complexities that everybody's facing, especially our youth today. If you have some sort of emotional turmoil, there aren't a lot of resources out there for them to turn to for some sort of positive guidance, and it festers for a while. And they pick up on it. They're very intelligent. The recruiters are very, very intelligent. They build up the community as a family. They make it seem that this is where you're most accepted, where they're going to make you feel wonderful about yourself and build you up. It doesn't take that much if you're in that position of vulnerability. When somebody's offering you solutions, some sort of comfort, support, how easy it is to turn and think that's the answer and believe it and be convicted that that's exactly what it is and committed to the cause.
Do you think that in your case, Canadians, your government certainly are so against the idea of acknowledging that radicalization could be a problem in their own country, that efforts like this, you know, to bring awareness to other parents aren't getting the help that they probably could use?
They're not getting the help. I mean, I still communicate with parents over there, the help and support for the families, the ripple effect that it causes, that support is just not there. And whenever an incident happens, they talk about it again. They're going to fund it, a program. They've been talking about programs since I started going public with it. And nothing ever comes to fruition. Everything dies down and then it gets put away on a shelf again. And it's unfortunate because even once ISIS is defeated, they're not the only organization out there. There's al-Nusra, al-Qaeda. There's right-wing extremism that's building and growing cults just because of the turmoil that our world's in. And as long as they keep putting it away and not dealing with the root issues and putting those supports in place for the families, we're not going to have any solution whatsoever, and it's just going to be a continuation in one group after another.
Christiane Boudreau is co-founder of Mothers for Life. She's a Canadian mother from Calgary. Her son, Damien Claremont, joined ISIS and was killed fighting with ISIS in Syria. She spoke to me from France. Christiane Boudreau, thank you.
Thank you.
Christiane Boudreau's story was brought to us as part of an ongoing collaboration with News Deeply. That's an award-winning media platform that covers critical and underreported stories from all over the world. To see more of what they're up to on this story and others like it, visit their website, newsdeeply.com/womenandgirls.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.